Support for this podcast comes from Dr. Kelly O'Neill. Do you want to study Russian history through the lens of maps? Uncover the spatial mysteries of Imperial Russia? You too can be a part of this astounding and thought-provoking experience. Sign up through Harvard Online. You can see her maps on omika.com. Yet. You're listening to Molly Lab from Longmont, Colorado. You know, I remember back when I barely thought about pandemics and epidemics, or really any kind of demics. But today, we're faced with it constantly. And understanding that these events come as much from the knowledge we have today as from their stories through history, it's powerful. This brings me to our podcast for today. We're going to take a journey into the history of the 1892 Russian cholera epidemic. And not just the epidemic, but some of the events leading up to that tragic point in history. In 1892, Russia was hit with its fifth cholera epidemic. It arrived this time from Persia and had its ground zero likely in the city of Meshed. It traveled up the rivers and westward from there, impacting different corners of the country. This 19th century version of Russia, with its poverty, less than sanitary urban and rural infrastructure, weak administrative functions, and extensive long-distance trade and migration patterns provided the perfect conditions for the cholera outbreak that would occur. But what about the circumstances leading up to that event? What about the devastating famine that preceded it in 1891? Today, medical experts have identified a connection between the conditions created by famine and increased spread and death from diseases such as cholera. Frank G. Klimov, who in 1893 published a groundbreaking and comprehensive summary of the impact, distribution, and influences on the cholera epidemic, acknowledged the topic of famine and cholera, but he concluded that the famine created no discernible susceptibility to contraction. He said of the two events, "The balance of evidence, therefore, points clearly to the conclusion that the weakened condition of the peasants and the famine-stricken governments did not predispose them to contract cholera." These two perspectives, separated by space and time, give us different insights into the influence of famine on the cholera epidemic that killed so many. So we ask, did the 1891 famine impact the intensity or mortality of Russia's 1892 epidemic? To investigate this question, I'm going to take you on a twisty and curvy journey through history. But don't worry, I'll drop you back off to the present day before we're done. We are going to hear from journalists, map makers, medical professionals, and scholars while on this trip. But we must begin our story not in 1892 during the epidemic, as one might expect, but a year earlier, in 1891, during the country's crippling famine. Okay, are you ready? So what are we waiting for? Let's go. Act 1, 1891 famine. Now, I'm going to need you to do something, and bear with me. I know, but trust me. I want you to close your eyes. And spoiler alert, this is the part where I transport you back in time. You get to travel along with a Reuters agent, E.A. Bradley Hodgetts, from Berlin to Russia during the famine. Two of the areas you will visit are near Voronezh and Tambov. Upon arrival to the village of Makary, near Voronezh, you observe that the people here are struggling significantly with the famine, but there are also some well-organized distribution of relief from the Zemstvo. In Ramon, also nearby, you observe some economic support through a sugar factory, which is encouraging. And while administrative capacities are seen in both a school and a hospital in the village, you notice something peculiar relative to their distribution of free public dinners. The peasants eat out of one common dish with a wooden label that passes from person to person. All you can think of is that this approach, used more heavily due to the famine, might easily affect an entire village if there was a contagious disease. You move to the next location, Tambov, one of the smallest areas hit, which almost has solely agricultural-based production with no industry to depend on. But observations of famine here feel random. Fuel seems to be as much a problem here as lack of food. You can't help but notice that the men are tall and handsome, and the women look happy. and so you can only assume that up to now, it has been somewhat of a prosperous province. And while famine has definite presence here, there are other situations that you see where peasants do not seem to be hurting as badly from the famine. And overall, you think, as compared to Verona's, that their distress seems less severe. All of this suffering might have been worse had the Zvinstva not been here to help the people. Now that you've traveled around the country, you are to visit with a 19th century mapmaker. You've been asked to help document your Russian famine observations in the form of a map. You help etch your beautiful but sad map to show the provinces and cities such as Voronezh, Tambov, Irkutsk that were affected by the famine. But not as significantly, there are areas such as Saratov, Simbirsk, Penza, and Tula. Those were the most affected. You are shading rather darkly those most affected to ensure that those viewing the map understand this. And while you can guess that this map data is likely not wholly accurate, the relative trends may be something that those from the future can and should consider. As you are mapping, you also include rivers so that people can observe the more intense areas that are near the Volga and Ural rivers. You can't help but think about the people you visited and the state of affairs in those areas. Act 2, 1892 cholera. Time flies, and here you are in the 1892 cholera epidemic. Your first account of its devastation comes through a discussion with a medical doctor named Frank G. Klimov. He also has a map of Russia, but he observes the distribution of cholera in the different regions of Russia instead of famine. You notice that the cholera epidemic intensity was at its worst near the Caspian Sea and seemed to lessen as one moved further west, until eventually, with only a couple of exceptions, cases were less than 100 per 100,000 inhabitants. You remember your experiences abroad and your map-making experience from the famine, and you notice that some of the hardest hit from the famine are also some of the hardest hit during the epidemic. Something curious jumps out relative to the regions of Tambov and Voronezh, to which you feel like you know the people there. Both of these areas had higher numbers than their similarly aligned northern and southwesterly districts, but less than their northeastern neighbors. The numbers themselves aren't necessarily unexpected, since the cholera numbers toward the east are the highest, but relative to other nearby famine regions, they take on similar relative trends. Tambov and Voronezh's cholera intensity is higher than non-famine regions, but lower than the famine region's hardest hit. But you shake your head, there isn't enough data to support any conclusions here, and so you remain unconvinced. Next, you turn to foreign journalists from the time to understand perceptions from the outside in. What are other people saying? One journalist from the British Medical Journal in 1892 stated, "Nothing has yet been heard of any similar preparations in Russia, although there can be no doubt that many of the famine-stricken governments are only too ripe for an epidemic of cholera of the most appalling severity. The Russian rulers do not seem to be conscious of the terrible responsibility resting on them, not only with regard to the unhappy Russian people, but the whole of mankind. They seem to be incapable of realizing that, under existing circumstances, an outbreak of Asiatic cholera in a single famine-stricken region of Russia may very easily become transformed into a pandemic, which will break through all quarantine and political boundaries and destroy millions of human lives." A journalist a few years after the epidemic from the Washington Post said that they, quote, "demonstrate that every great famine of man is attended by almost simultaneous famine of the beast, first by an epidemic of bovine typhus, and secondly by an epidemic of Asiatic cholera," end quote. All of this is difficult to process, and being so close to the 1892 moment makes it even more difficult to look at things from a big picture standpoint. In your last and final stop through history, we talk with both 20th and 21st century scholars on causal factors relative to the intensity of cholera and mortality numbers. And while we have lost our living in the moment perspective from 19th century, we have gained the knowledge and wisdom of recent history. We first turn to Stephen Hawke, who in 1989 investigated a place we are all very familiar with, the Tambov district in Borshchevka parish. Hawke's analysis on susceptibility to infection complicates this potential famine cholera connection by giving us considerations that draw out altogether different, non-spatial considerations relative to what might influence the intensity and spread of cholera over time. He determines that demographic factors, familial norms, and climactic constraints are key in determining infection and mortality rates. This seems to recomplicate the picture and our understanding of cholera spread. Our final scholar, Sergei Nevedov, we visit in 2021. He authored a study reviewing the potential connectivity between famine and cholera in Russia at the end of the 19th and 20th century, concluding that the 1892 cholera does correlate with the number of victims of hunger. And if we delve even more specifically into this work, he identifies that the intensity of hunger in different provinces explains approximately 75% of the variation in the spread of cholera in those regions. So what do we make of all of this? This journey was not one of conclusions, but of perspectives and experiences of the journey itself. As much as we would like to think, history is not a collection of isolated events, but instead is one flowing multidimensionality interconnected by the people, the space, and the multitudes of invisible factors that we cannot see. It causes us to question as much as we answer, but hopefully, every time we consider the different perspectives and knowledge of those from then and now, both seen and unseen, we are able to piece together just a little more of the puzzle that is not just the past, but is the present. I'm Molly Meyer Allen, back next semester with more stories of Russian history.